but he only came halfway up, stopping with his shoulders pressing my knees wide, his face between my legs. I started to sit up, tried to put my hand there to block him, suddenly embarrassed and awkward. I knew what he wanted to do. At least, I thought I did. I'd read about it, but no one had ever... I hadn't really imagined. Before I could get my thoughts together, Gage's hand closed over mine, and he eased it back, bearing my body to him. "Do you want me to stop?" he asked. Before I could get my head together enough to answer, he pressed a kiss right there, right on the center of all my need, all my pent-up desire. I shuddered with the illicit pleasure. I'd never imagined being kissed there, but now that Gage had, I wanted him to do it again. He pulled back and rose up above me, his eyes on mine. "I'll stop if you want me to, but I think you should trust me. Can you do that?" His lips touched mine, and I tasted myself on him. I was done with thinking, done with being embarrassed or afraid. I nodded. Gage settled back between my legs. I tried to brace myself for what was coming, but I had no clue. His tongue traced me, taking his time. He wasn't in a rush, or racing to some end goal, trying to make me come so he could get his. Gage explored me, tasting, teasing me until I was writhing against the pillows, gasping from the rising tension. When he closed his lips over my clit and sucked, the crash of pleasure took me by surprise, and I cried out, rolling my hips into his mouth. He murmured his approval against me, the rub of his lips drawing out my orgasm. He pressed his cheek to my thigh, stroking my legs as the tremors in my muscles calmed, and I caught my breath. Just when I was sure he'd move over me, one long finger slid inside, parting my heated flesh, filling me. I had the fleeting thought that if one finger felt like that, there was no way he would fit. He proved me wrong when a second finger joined the first, smoothly pumping in and out, his fingertips grazing something inside that sent hot shivers up my spine, had me rocking into him, taking his fingers deeper and harder. I was panting, calling his name, every nerve in my body wound tight with blissful tension when, finally, he withdrew his fingers and rose above me. I watched with desperate, fascinated attention as he picked up a condom from the side of the mattress and rolled it on. Then he was back, pressing into me, and the stretch of his body inside mine was delicious. Perfect. I arched into him, taking more, wishing he would slam into me and push me over the edge into the orgasm that hovered just out of reach. Gage thrust in slowly, in gradual pulses that teased more than satisfied. It seemed to take forever before he filled me all the way. He stayed there, motionless, his breath ragged. His mouth came to mine and he kissed me. More of those long, deep, languid kisses that spun my head in dizzy passion. His hips moved in the same slow, patient rhythm, drawing in and out, fucking me with iron control. Gage trembled above me, pushed to the edge from holding himself back. For me, this man, this warrior who could take what he wanted, who could have anything, was claiming my body in slow, dreamy strokes, protecting me, treasuring me even in this. The pleasure built higher with each stroke. Every time I thought I'd hit the peak and would tumble into bliss, he slowed down and pushed me higher. I tore my mouth from his and begged, "Please, please, Gage, please. More." His mouth took mine again, this kiss raw and a little rough as he rode the edge of control. He moved faster, fucking me harder, sliding his hand under my shoulders and bracing me, trying to keep his thrusts from jolting my head. I wasn't feeling any pain. All I felt was Gage, and the wave of pleasure he'd built so high I thought I would lose myself when it broke. And I did. The tension cracked open, and I fell into a bliss so sharp, so sweet, it sucked me under, drowning my senses, drowning me in gauge. He stiffened between my legs, taking me in short, jerky thrusts, drawing out my orgasm. I tightened my legs around him, holding him to me, my mouth pressing kisses anywhere I could reach, his jaw, his neck, his shoulder. Tension drained from his body and he rolled to his back, pulling me on top of him, his fingers stroking my hair from my face. When we both had our breath back, Gage slid out from under me and disappeared into the bathroom. I heard the water run and the toilet flush before he reappeared, a washcloth in his hand, warm, soothing heat between my legs. He was gone again for a minute before he returned, sliding into bed and pulling me into his arms. "How's your head?" he asked, his voice heavy and languid. I giggled, the light happy sound surprising me. I tightened my arm around his chest in a squeeze of reassurance. "All of me feels wonderful," I whispered. I drifted into sleep, holding on to Gage, his heat and strength and kindness, and trying not to think about what we'd just done, how it would change everything. I couldn't forget what he'd said that night on the couch. "If you let me get inside that sweet angel's body of yours, I'm not going to be able to let you go." The memory of his words washed through me. The last thing I needed was another man who thought he owned me. Gage wasn't Anthony. I knew that. That didn't mean he was what I needed. I wanted to be sensible, smart. But more than that, I just wanted Gage.
Chapter 19. Gage. My sneakers struck the pavement in a familiar cadence that felt so much better on a road than a treadmill. Winter's house was a haven, but it was also becoming a trap. Or it would if I didn't push the boundaries of my life. It was too easy to stay home, to bury myself in work, especially with Sophie there. With Sophie around, why would I want to leave? If I wanted my life back, I had to start living it. I couldn't remember the last time I'd gone running in the neighborhood, though when I'd lived here full-time, I'd done it every day. Buckhead was an urban anomaly, big lots, bigger houses, and winding lanes shaded by old-growth trees. If someone dropped you in the middle of Buckhead, you'd think you were out in the country and not just north of the heart of Atlanta. Minutes away, you'd find busy streets, high-end shopping, office buildings, and freeways. But here in the silence of early morning, I was surrounded by the trees and only the occasional passing car. I had plans for the day, and they started with a run. When I got back, I'd hit the weights in the gym before I took a shower. A few hours of work, and then I was taking Sophie to lunch. We were having a family dinner that night to celebrate Annalise's return sometime that afternoon. Before the hordes of winters descended, I wanted Sophie to myself. The night before had been beyond anything I'd expected, I won't lie. Since the night we'd met when I grabbed her in the dark, I'd been imagining getting Sophie naked. I'd had my hands on her, and I knew what she was hiding under that bulky robe and her starched camp shirts. For almost as long, I'd known this was about more than her body. Meeting Sophie had been a 1-2 punch. I touched her. I heard her voice. And I knew. Sophie Armstrong was it for me. Coming back to Winter's house should have been it. Should have been the thing that made me feel at home. I'd grown up there. But when I'd walked through the door, I'd only felt out of place. With Sophie, I was home. Everything about her called to me. Her stubbornness, her kindness, the deft way she handled Amelia, keeping her out of trouble without trying to squash her spirit, her smile, and the sweet, soothing tones of her voice. It didn't hurt that she was sexy as hell and looked like an angel with all that silvery blonde hair and those green eyes. By some kind of fucking miracle, she seemed to see something in me that she liked. We hadn't known each other long, but I knew in my gut that Sophie wouldn't have slept with me for sport. The way she kissed me. The way she'd stayed with me that night in the library. Sophie never would have let that happen unless she felt it too. We had a chance for something if I didn't manage to fuck it up. I wasn't going to fuck it up. I grinned, remembering the way she'd gotten me to agree to talk to a shrink. Smart, stubborn, and a little sneaky. I liked it. It didn't hurt that she'd agreed to see one herself. I could deal with my own mess. I'd seen this kind of thing before. I knew what I was dealing with, and I knew it would be a lot easier to handle with help. I just didn't want to go. Who did? No one, especially guys like me. We spend our lives training to handle every eventuality, to never give up, to push to the end. Seeing a shrink is like admitting we can't handle it. Fuck that. I can handle anything the enemy can throw at me. I've proven it over and over. I could handle anything, except the nightmares and the insomnia. The volatility and the bursts of temper. That shit wasn't me. It had been just over a month since I'd made my way out of that hidden camp in the desert. Too soon to expect to feel normal again. Fuck. I had no idea when I could expect to feel normal again. Another reason seeing a shrink wasn't a bad idea. All the times I'd given that advice to other guys, never thinking I'd have to take it myself. If not for Sophie, I might have spent who knows how long insisting I could handle it on my own. One look into her green eyes, wet with tears, and I hadn't been able to say no. I could have gotten through my shit on my own. Eventually. Sophie deserved better. Her husband had been dead for 2 years and she was still trapped by fear. She deserved to move on. She deserved to feel whole and strong. Seeing a shrink wasn't a magic pill that would fix everything. But it was a start. I'd call Cooper first thing and see if he could recommend anyone. I knew he'd have a name for me, and I hoped he'd have one for Sophie as well. 13 years ago, I'd walked away from my life. I was ready to take it back. Sophie was my catalyst. She was my reason. All those long months locked in a cell had given me time to plan. I'd decided I was coming home, decided I was taking back my place in my family and in our company. But it hadn't seemed real. I'd walked through the doors of Winter's house feeling out of place and off balance, as if my goals were a consolation prize. All my dreams felt like something to do because I didn't have anything else. I was alone, alive when I hadn't expected to be, aimless and lost. Until Sophie. She made me want more. For her, I wanted to be the man I imagined I could be. I wanted to give her everything she should have. A home. Stability. Love. Let's not bullshit around. I couldn't help but laugh at myself. Sophie had proven she was more than capable of providing her own home and her own stability. But I could give her love. I just had to convince her she wanted it. I turned the corner on the loop that would take me back to Winter's house and mapped out my strategy to win Sophie. She already had feelings for me. Or she wouldn't have let me in her bed. And she liked having me there. No one was that good at faking it. Sophie had loved the way I touched her, the way I'd fucked her. I wasn't above using sex to win her over. It wouldn't be a hardship for me. Finally getting into Sophie's bed might have been the high point of my life. Just remembering the way she'd taken me, her gasps and moans, the feel of her heavy, full breasts in my hands, the way her fingers gripped my hair as she rolled her hips into mine. Time for a new train of thought. Running with an erection is not fun, though that wasn't a problem I'd had before. I needed to think. I needed a plan. I didn't think getting into Sophie's bed would be the problem. She might even invite me back if she wasn't second-guessing herself this morning. No, the hard part would be bringing our relationship into the open. As far as I knew, other than Aiden's vague warning before he left on his trip, no one had any idea there was something between us. Knowing Sophie, she'd want to keep it that way. She'd say she worked for my family, which made me off-limits. Except I was pretty sure Aiden would kick me out of the house before he'd fire Sophie. If Aiden fired Sophie, Amelia would go ballistic. No one wanted to handle Amelia if she was pissed. I shuddered to imagine the shit she would pull without Sophie to rein her in. Sophie's position in Winter's house was safe. I just had to prove it to her. I tried to catch her at breakfast, but Mrs. W. informed me that she and Amelia had left while I was in the shower, planning to eat out and then go for a walk around Piedmont Park and the botanical gardens. After a few not-so-subtle questions, I learned they didn't have plans for the afternoon. I sent Mrs. W. a wink and went upstairs to tackle the rest of the homework I'd gotten from Charlie. She'd said she had more when I was done with this batch and was ready to move forward. I was starting to get a picture of the scope of the company's dealings. I wasn't ready to get back to work. I would be soon, with Charlie's help. While I was at my desk, I made a few calls, nailing down details on wedding stuff too small for the planner to bother with. I sent Charlie a quick update email and let her know I'd be stopping by later. When I was done, I touched base with the head of the Sinclair security team at the house, checking the alarm. So far, they hadn't been able to find a weak point in the system, but they were going to keep looking until they did. Someone was getting into Winter's house without setting off the alarm. No one would be safe until we figured out how they were getting in and stopped them. I was waiting in the kitchen when Sophie and Amelia returned, their cheeks flushed pink from the cold. Sophie laughing at something Amelia had said. She stopped short when she saw me, the color in her cheeks deepening to red. Her eyes met mine shyly, then flicked away. To Amelia, I said, "If you two don't have plans, I'd like to borrow Sophie for a few hours." Amelia gave me a speculative look. "That depends. What did you want to do with her?" "I thought I would take her out for lunch, then to Annabelle's for a hot chocolate. I have to stop and see Charlie, and I thought Sophie might want to see their new project."
"It's not my day off,"
Sophie started to say, but Amelia cut her off.
"Don't be silly. When a handsome young man wants to take you to lunch, you don't spend the afternoon with an old lady."
Sophie rounded on her, sending me a quick glare before saying to Amelia,
"I can spend my afternoon how I want, and you are not an old lady."
"Are you saying you don't want to go to lunch with Gage?" Amelia asked sweetly. This was going better than I'd hoped. If Amelia was on my side, Sophie didn't have a chance. Before Sophie could answer, Mrs. W. bustled in the kitchen and, seeing Sophie and Amelia, said,
"You're back. Will you want lunch, or did you eat? Abel went to the market, but I can fix you a sandwich."
"Soup and a sandwich are fine for me," Amelia said. "Sophie and Gage are going out for lunch."
Mrs. W. turned and looked from Sophie's face, flushed and annoyed, to mine. She smiled and said,
"That's lovely. You two have fun. The rest of the family will be here around 5 for pre-dinner cocktails, so make sure you're back by then."
"We will be," I promised. Sophie stepped back and crossed her arms over her chest.
"I can make my own decisions, and I never said I was going anywhere. It's not my day off. I shouldn't..."
I stepped in front of her. Looking down, I said quietly, "Sophie, would you please take the afternoon off and come out to lunch with me?" She let out a breath and stared up at me, worrying her lower lip between her teeth.
"Gage, I don't think we should..."
She cut off and looked quickly from Amelia to Mrs. W., taking in their unabashed interest in our conversation.
"It's not a good idea."
"Why isn't it a good idea?" Amelia interrupted in a strident voice. "Is there something wrong with my nephew?" Sophie attempted a retreat, but her back hit the kitchen island and she was stuck. She shook her head, looking at the three of us ranged around her, and said,
"Of course not. Of course, there's nothing wrong with Gage. But we shouldn't... I can't just leave Amelia and..."
She sent Mrs. W. a beseeching look. I braced. Mrs. W. was notorious for her strict adherence to the line between help and family. Amelia might be on my side, but Mrs. W. would be on Sophie's. She shocked the hell out of me when she tilted her head to the side and studied Sophie, then me, and said,
"I'll keep Amelia company, Sophie. Go out to lunch with Gage."
We all stared at her in shock. Mrs. W. went on as if nothing were unusual and said,
"Gage, help get Amelia settled in the dining room. I'm going to make her soup and a sandwich. I'd like a moment alone with Sophie."
Chapter 20. Gage. Without another word, I hooked my arm around Aunt Amelia's shoulders and ushered her out of the room. Sophie looked uncertainly at Mrs. W., still chewing on her lower lip. As soon as we cleared the kitchen, Amelia murmured, "I never thought I'd see the day that old battle axe and I agreed on something."
"Don't call Mrs. W. a battle axe," I said.
Mrs. W. was in her late 40s, but she looked a decade younger. She had the posture of a ballerina and the kind of bone structure that told you she'd been beautiful in her 20s, and would still be beautiful when she was Amelia's age. Even in her severe dresses, with her dark hair in a tight bun, she was in no way a battle axe. "I don't understand why the two of you have never gotten along, and I don't want to know. I'm just glad she's on my side." Amelia let me pull out her chair. When I went to leave, she said,
"Sit. Sophie will be in the kitchen for a few minutes, and I want to talk to you."
I sat in a chair beside Amelia's. "Don't you want lunch on a tray in the living room or the library?" I asked. The dining room was huge, with more than enough room for the entire family plus guests. Lunch for one would be lonely at the long table. Amelia smiled and looked around the room, her dark eyes taking in the polished table with loving warmth. "I have a lot of good memories from this room, Gage. When you get to my age, memory can be company." I thought of all the meals I'd eaten in that room when my parents had been alive and the whole family packed the table. Later, nightly dinners with Uncle Hugh and Aunt Olivia, surrounded by my siblings and cousins. They were all here, the living and the dead. A part of the very fabric of this room, this house. I'd spent so many years running from my memories, haunted by them. I never stood still long enough to see that Winter's house was the one place where my family was always with me, even those that were gone. "I know what you mean," I said finally. Amelia reached out to take my hand and squeezed.
"I know you do."
She gave my hand another squeeze and held it in hers.
"You take care of that girl, Gage. I know you too well to think you're playing with her, but I need to warn you anyway. If you don't treat her right, I'll be very disappointed in you."
After a long silence while I tried to come up with some kind of response, something funny, something that would deflect the seriousness of the conversation, I gave up and just said, "I think I'm falling in love with her."
Amelia gave me a brilliant smile and said, I already know that. You two think you're so subtle. The looks you were giving each other over cards yesterday, I thought you were going to set the library on fire. Don't tell Sophie that, I said. She'd die of embarrassment. I know that, foolish boy. I can keep things to myself when it's important. I know you've got a lot on your plate right now, and I know that you're head over heels in love with that girl. I'm just asking you to be careful with her. I will, I promised. Standing, I pressed a kiss to Amelia's wrinkled cheek and left, saying, I'll tell Mrs. W. you're ready for your lunch. I bumped into Sophie in the hall on my way back to the kitchen. Giving me another of those shy looks, she said, Just let me change. I'll be right back. Then she was gone, striding down the hall to her room. Whatever Mrs. W. said to her, it must have worked. Leaning in the kitchen doorway, I watched her efficiently assembling Amelia's sandwich as she heated soup in a small pot on the gas stove. Seeing me, she speared me with a sharp look and said, Don't make me regret this, Gage. I won't, I swear. It goes against everything I've always thought appropriate, she said crisply. But Sophie has a good head on her shoulders, and she'd never think to take advantage. See that you don't either. I nodded. I probably should have been offended that everyone was more worried about Sophie's well-being than mine. This was my family, not hers. It was just one more reminder that she'd been here, a part of their everyday lives, and I'd been gone. But as much as they adored Sophie, I knew that if Amelia and Mrs. W. didn't trust me to take care with her, they wouldn't be scheming to get her to go out with me. In a weird, backward way, them pushing me and Sophie together felt like forgiveness. Mrs. W. and Amelia were easy. Aiden, however, would be a problem. I'd deal with him later. For once, his long hours and habit of avoiding me were coming in handy. Sophie came back down the hall wearing the same jeans she'd had on before, now with a red wool turtleneck sweater. She'd taken her hair down, and it spilled over her shoulders in silvery blonde waves. The sweater covered every inch of skin above her waist, but it was snug and did nothing to hide the full swell of her breasts or the curve of her waist. I stared too long before I caught myself, imagining peeling up the soft red wool and sliding my hands over the creamy skin beneath. Mrs. W. cleared her throat. "We'll be back in a few hours," I said. "Is anyone using the Land Rover?" I think Abel took it to the market. Damn. I needed to get my own car. It hadn't been a priority in the short time I'd been home. Sophie interrupted.
We can take my truck.
That piece of crap truck in the garage was Sophie's? I'd assumed it was Abel's. Looking down at her, I said, Okay, but I'm driving. She laughed and bumped her shoulder into my arm. Are you one of those guys who never lets the woman drive? I took her hand in mine and pulled her through the kitchen to the mudroom and garage, giving Mrs. W. a quick wave as we left. Is that a problem? I asked. I hadn't really thought about it like that, though, if I were being honest, then yes, I was definitely the kind of man who didn't like the woman to drive.
I don't know, Sophie said. I guess it depends on what we're driving.
I grabbed the keys to the truck off the hook by the door. She'd already climbed into the passenger seat and was fastening her seatbelt. The truck needed a new paint job. The tires didn't look great either. It was a mid-size model, not huge and not a toy, but it still looked too big for Sophie. So you don't mind me driving your truck, but if it was something else, you might fight me for the keys? I asked, trying to figure her out.
I used to have a Volkswagen Beetle. Vintage. Not one of the new ones. No way would I have let you drive my girl. I could absolutely see Sophie driving a vintage VW Beetle. And at her comment, I couldn't help but laugh. Sophie, angel, there is no way in hell I'd fit into a vintage Beetle. She let out one of those giggles I loved, and something in my chest squeezed. If you were driving a Beetle before, what made you buy this? I asked, turning the key and wincing at the coughing rumble of the engine. It didn't sound very reliable. As I put it in gear and backed out of the garage, I thought it sounded like the transmission was going to fall out any second. I didn't buy this. Charlie lent it to me. Lucas bought her a new truck a few days after my Beetle died. I didn't want to spend money on a new car. I barely drive as it is, and Charlie didn't feel like selling this one, so she said I could borrow it. Lucas bought her a new truck? I asked. Charlie was fiercely independent, and I couldn't see her letting any man, even her fiancé, buy her a truck. He hated this one when she bought it, Sophie said. I got the impression they fought about it. A lot. And when he went behind her back and bought her a brand new one, she decided it wasn't worth fighting over anymore. I kind of think she gave me the truck to prove to Lucas that he couldn't make her sell this one even if he bought her a replacement. That sounds like Charlie, I said, looking around the interior of the truck. The upholstery was faded and torn in places. The stereo looked like it hadn't worked in a decade. I was too smart to say it out loud, but I was with Lucas. This truck was a piece of shit, and, if it was up to me, Sophie would never sit in it again. Later. I'd had enough of a battle getting her to eat lunch with me. Buying her a new car would have to wait. What did Mrs. W. say to you? I asked, unable to contain my curiosity. Sophie slid me a sidelong look and said, Not much. Just that there were exceptions to every rule and that it was smart to be cautious. But you're a good man, and worth the risk. My throat got unexpectedly tight. That was high praise from Mrs. W. I'd felt mostly like a mess since I'd been home. I was trying to get my bearings, to figure out how I fit into the world I'd left behind so many years ago. It was easy to forget that these people were my family. They would always have my back, just as I'd have theirs. Even Aiden. Probably Aiden, most of all. I reached out and took Sophie's hand. Look, I know this is complicated because you work for Amelia, but I don't want to hide. We can take this slowly, but I don't want to sneak around. And what about when it's over? We live in the same house, Gage. This is our first date, I said, annoyed. Do we need to talk about the end already? At least give me a chance to fuck something up before you talk about breaking up with me. Sophie pulled her hand from mine and gripped her purse, playing with the zipper and avoiding my eyes. Are we together then? We haven't really talked about it, and then last night... She cut off and looked out the window. Are you sorry we slept together? I asked, carefully. No, she said. But I wasn't expecting it, and this is all happening too fast. Do you want me to take you home? I asked, hoping she wouldn't say yes. I'd promised myself I wouldn't push Sophie into anything she didn't want, but at the time, I hadn't thought that would include lunch with me. No, she said, more quietly this time. I just... didn't expect this, that's all. Did you think I was going to sleep with you and then pretend nothing happened? I asked. The guilty look she sent me was adorable. Realization dawned. Or was that your plan with me? You were going to use me for sex and ignore me in the morning? I loved it when Sophie blushed, almost as much as when she laughed. I wasn't planning to sleep with you, she said, and then in a prim voice. I wasn't the one who had a condom in his pocket.
It's a good thing I did, or we'd be having a different conversation this morning, I pointed out. It's funny, everyone warning me off taking advantage of you, no one thinking to tell you the same.
I wasn't using you for sex, she protested. I hadn't had sex since Anthony died. I wasn't thinking about a relationship at all.
So is this about me? Or about getting involved with anyone? I didn't want to force Sophie into a corner, but I had to know.
It's not you, Gage. It's not. I just don't know if I'm ready for this.
How long has Anthony been dead, Sophie? I asked, already knowing the answer.
Years.
He'd been dead for years, and in all that time she'd been alone. Sophie didn't say a word. I pulled into a parking space in front of the restaurant and turned the truck off before I said, I know it was bad, and I know you're scared. I can't promise that everything's going to be perfect. I can't promise you a happy ending. But I swear, Sophie, I will make this worth the risk. I swear I will never intentionally hurt you, and I promise if this blows up in our faces, I'll get out of Winter's house until you think you can stand the sight of me again. Deal?
But you just came home, she protested, her green eyes wide with wonder as they studied my face.
I didn't say I'd leave Atlanta. But between Charlie and Lucas, Jacob's building, and Vance's place with Magnolia, I have plenty of options if we decide we need some space. I'm not asking you to risk your job, Sophie. I'm asking you to risk your heart.
Chapter 21. Sophie. I'm asking you to risk your heart. Just my heart, that's all. I managed to stifle a nervous laugh. After Anthony, getting involved with anyone felt like it was risking far more than just my heart. My sanity, my freedom, my life. After 2 years as a widow, that should have felt melodramatic. It didn't. I'd been alone all this time for a reason. Stalling for time, I looked through the front windshield of the truck and saw that Gage had pulled in front of a Middle Eastern restaurant. A few days ago, I'd mentioned having a craving for falafel, and now he brought me here, because he'd been listening, and he remembered. I closed my eyes and tried to think. Gage was not Anthony, and I was not a victim. Not anymore. I didn't want to lose a chance for something good because I was scared. Getting involved with Gage might blow up in my face. It probably would. But I would regret not taking the chance. I had enough regrets for a lifetime. I opened my eyes and said, "Let's go have lunch." Gage dropped his head and pressed his lips to mine. I leaned into his kiss, feeling like I was at the top of a roller coaster, ready to fall. All I could do was hang on for the ride. After our conversation in the car, lunch was a relief. Comfortable and easy. The food was good. The falafel crunchy and spicy. Gage joked that he'd seen enough of sand for a lifetime. But he loved the food over there. He ate enough for two people. But I'd seen how much time he put in the gym. We shared sticky sweet baklava for dessert before Gage led me from the restaurant and down the street to a funky little cafe with the name Annabelle's painted on the window. Inside, chairs and tables were arranged in a seemingly haphazard pattern, each set hand-painted with a different theme. An eclectic selection of artwork hung on the walls, everything from watercolors to photographs to mixed-media sculpture, each discreetly tagged with the price and artist information. There was a bookshelf in the back stuffed with paperbacks, puzzles, and games. Nearby, two couches and a handful of armchairs surrounded a coffee table, where a lively game of Monopoly appeared to be in progress. The line at the counter was at least 10 people long, the 3 baristas on the other side moving in clockwork synchronicity. Gage led us to the back of the line and wound his arm around my shoulders, pulling me tight to his side. Annabelle's was lively and interesting, and it smelled deliciously of freshly brewed coffee, chocolate, and vanilla. But it wasn't quiet. Leaning down, his lips brushed my ear as he said, "We went to school with Annabelle, and Aiden actually gave her the loan to start this place when she was still in college. She's the best coffee in town. But her hot chocolate is out of this world. I don't know what she does to it, but there's nothing like it." Gage! A tall, rangy woman with warm brown eyes and long, cinnamon-colored hair ducked around the end of the counter, a wide smile on her face. She threw herself into Gage's arms. "You're home! Charlie told me you were back. I'm so sorry I haven't gotten over to see you. This time of year, it's a madhouse around here." Gage gave her a tight hug and kissed her cheek. I tried not to be jealous. He'd just told me they were old friends. His arm still around her, he turned her to face me and said, "Annabelle, this is Sophie. Sophie, Annabelle of the amazing hot chocolate." Annabelle's face brightened when she heard my name, and her smile grew wider. "So this is Sophie. Charlie says you're a miracle worker. She says you're the only one who can keep her Aunt Amelia in line without starting World War III. Annabelle's enthusiasm was infectious, and I found myself smiling back, forgetting my momentary flash of jealousy. She led us to a cozy table for two in the corner. When Gage tried to pay, she waved him off. "Another time. This is a special occasion. I'm sorry I can't talk. I have to get back behind the counter. But if I don't see you before, I'll see you at the wedding." A quick kiss to Gage's cheek and a shoulder squeeze for me, and Annabelle was gone in a swirl of cinnamon-colored hair. "Is she always like that?" I asked. "Totally genuine and packed with enough energy for 20 people? Gage asked with a grin. I nodded. "Pretty much. You'd think it's all the espresso. But she was like that when she was a kid." Annabelle reappeared just long enough to give us our hot chocolate, a thick slice of red velvet cake, and say she'd have someone bring us a hot cocoa for Charlie when Gage mentioned that was our next stop. I thought I was full from lunch, but Gage had been right. Annabelle's hot chocolate was the best thing I'd ever tasted. This was what chocolate dreamt of. Sweet, creamy, and rich, with just a hint of bitterness to keep it from tasting like chocolate syrup. The red velvet cake was almost as good, and I wondered if she baked it in-house. Either way, now that I'd finally been to Annabelle's, I knew I'd be back. I'd been meaning to come here for months. Charlie talked about it all the time, but with Amelia's low-sugar diet, bringing her to a place packed with dessert cases was asking for trouble. Since I spent most of my time with Amelia, I'd never been here before. Charlie's hot chocolate appeared on the table, delivered by one of the baristas from behind the counter. Annabelle was nowhere to be seen as we left. Gage held my hand as he walked me back to the truck, opening the door for me and waiting until I was settled before closing it and rounding the truck to get in himself. My head spun a little at the sheer normalcy of the afternoon. We were just 2 people eating lunch together and sharing a slice of cake. Nothing weird about that, right? Except that I couldn't remember the last time I'd been on a date. Not one like this. My dates with Anthony had been formal affairs, dinners in fine restaurants, and a chaste kiss at my door. "Have you seen the new place Charlie and Lucas bought?" Gage asked as he started the truck. "Not yet," I said, "but the last one they did was amazing." Just before Thanksgiving, Charlie and Lucas had finished rehabbing a mid-century modern house in the Virginia Highlands, not far from where they lived. Lucas had proposed to Charlie there the day they finished the house, and not a week later it was under contract. I wasn't surprised. I didn't know much about real estate, but I knew what looked good, and that house had been beautiful. I'd heard their newest purchase was a dump, If you went by Aiden's opinion, it was going to collapse on Charlie's head any second. Though Lucas had reassured him the foundation and basic structure were sound. When we pulled up in front of the modest craftsman bungalow, I could see Aiden's point. My opinion must have shown on my face because Gage took one look at me and burst out laughing. "I'm sure they can fix this, right?" I said doubtfully. The roof over the porch sagged alarmingly. Most of the front steps were missing, and two of the four windows facing the street were boarded up. The house was a nondescript grayish color that might have originally been green or purple or blue. Now it was just sad. According to Vance, Charlie and Lucas's house was this bad when she bought it. Everyone thought she was nuts, but you've seen it, haven't you? I had. Charlie and Lucas's house was a showpiece, every inch of it restored with loving care and a sharp eye for good design. Aiden had commented that she could put it back on the market and make a tidy profit, but Charlie and Lucas had fallen in love putting that house back together. Neither of them would sell it for any amount of money. I found it hard to believe their house had ever been this bad. "If you say so," I said, willing to give Charlie and Lucas the benefit of the doubt. After all, they knew what they were doing. What I knew about restoring homes wouldn't fill a postcard. Gage helped me out of the truck, carrying Charlie's hot chocolate in one hand. She said to go in through the back. I followed him through the side yard, picking my way carefully across the scrubby grass and around discarded piles of trash. Based on the dented beer cans, damp cardboard, and other junk. It looked like Charlie hadn't gotten around to cleaning up the mess left behind by the former owners. Charlie met us at the back door, swinging it open and stepping down to the concrete blocks she'd put in place of actual stairs. Her chin-length auburn curls were pulled back beneath a beat-up ball cap, and her eyes lit when she caught sight of the paper cup in Gage's hand. "You brought me Annabelle's!" She jumped over the remaining stairs, meeting us in the grass, and snagged the cup from Gage. "I owe you one," she said, taking a long sip. "I think it's the other way around," Gage said. "Whatever." Her eyes drifted down and she caught sight of Gage's hand holding mine. Raising one eyebrow, she said to me, "So, are you giving Gage a trial run?" Gage bit back a laugh and I shrugged a shoulder. "Kind of," I said. "Good for you. I'd say he's a lot to handle, but you're used to managing Amelia. One of the Winter's men is child's play compared to that." This time, Gage didn't bother to bite back his laugh. I couldn't help but join in. Keeping a handle on Amelia took every bit of creativity and tenacity I had. I still wasn't sure I could manage Gage, but I was going to try. Gage dropped my hand and put his arm around me. My phone rang in my pocket, and I pulled it out, hearing him say to Charlie, "Do you have that jump drive you were talking about? I finished those reports. When you get a chance, I want to sit down and..." I stopped listening as I studied the screen of my phone. The number read as unknown. I hit the button to answer and held it up to my ear. "Hello?" Silence. Something in the background. A voice? I couldn't make it out. "Hello?" I said again. Just as I was about to hang up, a man said, "Sophie, I've missed the sound of your voice." The phone slipped from my fingers, striking a broken chunk of concrete at my feet. The plastic case cracked, the noise cutting through Gage and Charlie's conversation. I heard Gage say my name, felt his eyes on me. I stared down at the phone, imagining I still heard that voice. The way he'd said my name. Sophie. Before we got married, I'd loved the way my name sounded when he said it. Almost reverent, worshipful. Later, it turned my heart to ice. I heard it again. My name. This time in Gage's low rumble, instead of Anthony's smooth, cultured tones. Gage's strong hands closed over my shoulders, turning me to face him. Who was it? What did they say? I looked up at him, eyes wide, not really seeing anything past my shock. It must have been a trick, It had to have been a trick, because Anthony was dead. The policeman came to my door and told me Anthony was dead. Sophie? Who called you? Charlie asked gently. I shook my head, not wanting to answer, not wanting to put that horror of a phone call into words. Angel, take a deep breath, Gage said, stepping to the side and pulling me back, away from my broken phone, and into his arms. I leaned into his strong body, breathing in his scent. Finally, I whispered, It was Anthony. It couldn't have been, but it was. Gage's arms tightened around me. Over my head, I heard him say to Charlie, Call Cooper. Find out if he's at Winter's house or if he's still at the office. Tell him Sophie got a weird call. We need her phone checked, and the screen is cracked, so she'll need a new one. Find out where he is, and we'll meet him. The door to the house opened and shut as Charlie went in to make the call. Gage rested his chin on the top of my head and rubbed his hand up and down my spine, soothing me. I was such a fucking mess. Just the sound of his voice, 2 years later, and I was ready to curl into a ball and weep with terror. The worst moments of my marriage poured through my brain in a kaleidoscope of misery and fear. I leaned into Gage, staring at the scrubby grass of Charlie's yard. Anthony was the past. He couldn't hurt me now. Eventually, my heartbeat slowed and my breathing evened out. Gage must have felt my body relaxing into him, because he said, You okay? I shook my head against his chest. No, I was not okay. I'd just gotten a phone call from my dead husband. You're sure that was Anthony? Gage asked carefully. I let out a sigh. Sure it was Anthony's voice, I said. It couldn't be Anthony. Anthony's dead. I feel like an ass for asking this. But are you sure? I stepped back a little and looked up into Gage's worried face. The police said there wasn't much left of the body, but there was enough to identify him. They were sure it was Anthony. Charlie came back out of the house. She handed something to Gage that looked like a USB drive and said, Cooper was just leaving the office. He grabbed Sophie a replacement phone and said to bring that one and meet him at Winter's house. He'll find out who made the call. Looking at me with warm, concerned eyes, she said, Cooper will figure this out. That's his job. You'll feel better once you know where that call came from and why. Gage retrieved my phone and tucked it into his pocket. We were quiet on the drive back to Winter's house, both of us lost in thought. Gage's hand holding mine all the way. Chapter 22 Sophie Cooper Sinclair met us at the kitchen door. His cool blue eyes narrowed on me in concern. We'd met a few times since I'd been living at Winter's house. I'd met all the Sinclairs here and there. They were as close as family to the Winters, and they showed up for dinner often when Aiden was around. Cooper was built like Gage, tall and broad. He didn't look like he spent most of his time behind a desk, though I'd heard him complain about being stuck in the office more than once.
"Let's talk in the library," he said. "Aiden is still at the office, but I filled him in on the security system over the phone. Bottom line, we're installing sensors on most of the first floor windows, the ones that didn't already have them, and turning on motion detectors in key areas. That's a start, until we figure out what the hell is going on."
"You didn't find any sign of a breach in the system?" Gage asked.
"Not so far. If someone got in the house, someone fucking hit Sophie over the head," Gage interrupted.
Cooper gave him a sober nod. We followed him into the library and sat on the couch, side by side.
"However they got in the house, they didn't bypass or breach the system. There has to be a way in we don't know about. Until we find it, the motion sensors will give you an extra layer of safety."
Looking at me, he said,
"How's your head?"
"Better. It wasn't really that bad." Beside me, Gage growled, a low, almost imperceptible sound.
I squeezed his hand. I think he was more upset about my bump on the head than I was. Cooper shook his head.
I'm sorry. Somewhere we missed something. It won't happen again. It better not,
Gage said, his arm tightening around me. Cooper caught the possessive gesture and rolled his eyes. Gage pulled my broken phone from his pocket and handed it to Cooper.
It's the last call that came in. We haven't tried to turn the phone on, so I don't know how badly it's damaged.
Cooper shook his head in dismissal.
It's good. I can work with this. Sophie, do you care if I have your phone? I can give you a new one.
No, whatever you need to do is fine.
What can you tell me about the call?
It sounded like it was my husband. Which is impossible because he's been dead for 2 years.
Do you have any idea who would try to play a trick on you?
I shook my head, watching as Cooper pulled a mobile phone out of his pocket, powered it on and connected it to my broken phone. Despite the shattered screen and cracked case, my phone powered on at the press of a button. Cooper did a few things on the new phone and set them both on the coffee table.
We'll find out where that call came from and hopefully who placed it. Do you have reason to believe you might be in danger from anyone associated with your husband?
I looked from Cooper to Gage, Cooper's eyes curious and Gage's heavy with concern. I hated the answer to his question, and how stupid it made me seem. I didn't want to remember the naive woman who'd married Anthony. I don't know very much about Anthony's life outside of our marriage, I said. He kept me isolated. But toward the end, I started to wonder. He came home a few times with blood on his shirt. Never very much, and he always had an excuse. And there was the stress. My voice dropped to a whisper. He was always so tense, angry. But I didn't actually know what he was doing.
Not really.
He told me he was an accountant. I gave a small, helpless shrug. I knew his story didn't make sense, but that didn't mean I knew the truth. Cooper didn't seem to need more of an explanation. Kindly, he said,
"Don't worry about it, Sophie. If he was involved in anything sketchy, we'll find out. Did he leave you anything? Anything someone else might be interested in?"
Not really. There was some money. Not a lot after the funeral expenses. I got the house, which I sold. His car was totaled in the accident, and there was some insurance money. But if you mean any papers or anything of value, then no. His will stated that all his personal belongings and the contents of the house would go to his brother. It was weird because he'd told me they were estranged, but by the time I knew about the will, Anthony was gone, so I couldn't ask him about it.
Okay. I'll look into that, Cooper said. I'm going to get out of your hair. I'll be in touch tomorrow to let you know what I find out.
He stood, disconnected my broken phone from the one he'd brought, and handed the new one to me.
I cloned your phone to this one. You can use it just like normal. But we'll be monitoring any calls. So don't say anything you don't want one of us to hear, unless it's dirt on Gage, in which case, feel free to talk away. I can always use the ammunition.
I gave him a weak smile. I'll see what I can come up with, I said.
What are the chances this phone call is related to Sophie's hit over the head?
Aiden asked, walking in behind us.
Thought you were still at work, Cooper commented.
Aiden gave an abrupt shake of his head.
I came home early.
Both Gage and Cooper stared at Aiden for a moment. So did I. Aiden never came home early. Answering Aiden's question, Cooper said,
It's possible. I tend to think no, but until we figure this out, I don't want to make any assumptions.
It seems unlikely that we have two separate issues in the same week,
Aiden said.
That's why it's tempting to connect them, Connor said. But a call from her dead husband is contact aimed specifically at unsettling Sophie. If she's the reason for the break-in, then the hit over the head doesn't make sense. Whoever the intruder was, he had her right there, alone, in the hallway. Hitting her over the head implies that she was in the way, rather than the target. Makes sense,
Aiden admitted.
I don't like all this going on so close.